RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. Josh, I have some interesting news about this week's episode. I can honestly say this is the best episode of Arrow since they came back from their spring break.
Okay. All right. I'll give that to you.
So
I think I'm going to agree with you.
Okay, good. I'm going to lead with that, and we'll just kind of see where it goes from there.
Yeah. And for whatever reason this week, I was feeling it with all the shows that you and I talk about, man. I must have been a little bit backed up last week. I don't know. I wasn't eating right or something, or I don't know. Got enough rest. I'm feeling good about all the shows this week, and this was no exception by any means.
That is true. I feel that the perspective, possibly it's the perspective of having been off for what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, basically 2 weeks, I guess. They didn't have episodes for 2 weeks, so I guess they are off for 2 weeks. Might have lent a little more gravitas to this particular episode, but I think there's some other things going on, and of course that's what we're going to talk about.
I agree with all that, and I'm very glad that I kind of had that, I'll call it a mourning period, because I, reading a lot of stuff online and then talking to you about it a couple weeks ago and just having some time to let it sink in, I think it really made a difference. I'm feeling pretty good about this one, much more than I was last time.
Just as a final piece before we get into the episode, you know, specifically, I actually would have preferred this episode to be the, I felt it would have been better for them to have done the previous episode, followed immediately by this episode the next week, and now we have our 2 week break. I think the cathartic effect of that would have been much more felt in fandom.
Maybe so.
Then having the break in between, but you do have a good point about the way they place the break and stuff.
Yeah. So. Well, and later on in the show, we're going to get to some people's feelings and opinions about the events from a few weeks ago.
I want to save some time for that. Yeah.
That really made a difference for me as well. The things that people talk to us about, it really made me think. So thanks to everybody that wrote in.
Absolutely. All right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the episode we're discussing this week on Green Justice.
Episode 19, Season 4, Canary Cry, aired April 27th, 2016. And it was written by Wendy Miracle and Beth Schwartz. Now, that is a name that is very familiar to people that watch Arrow. They've written quite a few episodes, haven't they?
Yeah, they've written episodes individually with other people. Like Wendy has worked with Mark Guggenheim, and you know Beth's teamed up with Oscar Balderrama and stuff like that. But when Wendy and Beth come together to write episodes, I think they've written some of the best episodes, or episodes that we really have enjoyed. Three amazing episodes from season two, including Blind Spot, which was a Brother Blood and Laurel in Rehab episode, Time of Death with the Clock King, and Seeing Red, where Roy has to deal with his Mirakuru issues. And then a really good episode in season three, Draw Back Your Bow, which was the first Cupid episode. So I was very optimistic, I guess is the word I want to use, when I saw they were writing this particular episode.
Well, and all of those episodes, looking back, I think they dealt with these deep-seated emotional issues that people had to go through. I mean, I guess to a point, all of the episodes are kind of like that, but I think these were a little bit deeper. All the ones you read, and this one especially. So,
yeah.
Well, it was directed by Laura Belzy.
Okay.
Which, not sure which episode she's directed in the past, if any, but this one went pretty well.
Yeah, I hadn't actually hadn't looked her up. Her name doesn't click off the top of my head.
Yeah, it doesn't sound familiar. So
for anyone.
So, well,
I think
this
it was just
is
this episode. So
just this one. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, kudos to her then, because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well, this is what it sounds like when canaries cry.
Mm.
Not so much doves. Oh, that was last week, I think, when what it sounded like when doves cry. But this week it was canaries. As the team and you know, Laurel's family, they deal with her untimely death at the hands of Damien Dark. Their frustrations present themselves in a variety of ways, all right? Oliver continues to excel in his area of expertise, brooding. Diggle finds and abuses Mayor Rouvet while he sinks into the quagmire of vengeance. And poor Quentin holds out hope that all the bizarre and magical experiences that he's had in the last 3 years will bring back his beloved daughter. They'll all cope, though, because you know what? They're heroes, and they're tough. But Oliver isn't going to let anyone rest on their laurels. Oh, sorry about that. You know what? Sorry. Let me rephrase that. Sit back and relax is what I meant. They want to go take Dark out soon. They want to just get him, but he just doesn't know how they're going to do that now that he has his powers back. And to make matters worse, someone has taken the Black Canary's sonic scream and is terrorizing certain citizens of Star City, and the ones that she blames for letting her parents die. And now Rouvet Dark's issuing arrest warrants for all vigilantes, which is tarnishing the legacy of the Black Canary.
We can't have our legacies tarnished now, can we?
No, that is not good. Then you got to take him to the airport and get him, you know, shine, sit down in that chair. And
yeah. I don't think they have that at my airport anymore.
They don't have that anymore? They still have that at our airport. My shoes are never in need of polishing, though. I always try to wear the flip-flops or the Crocs when I'm at the airport. It makes it easier.
There you go. TSA appreciates your patience.
Yes, they do.
All right. Well, before we get started, fans of Katie Cassidy, we had mentioned this a few weeks ago. We'll continue to see her on the CW. She will be appearing on the May 17th episode of The Flash called Invincible. That is the penultimate episode for this second season of The Flash, where she will be playing Black Siren, the Earth 2 counterpart to Black Canary. Not sure if she's a bad person, but she does appear to be leading Zoom's army of metahumans. So
you're not sure if she's a bad person then, or
that's maybe pretty, she's just drawn that way.
Pretty strong.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong evidence, though. That's
pretty much, if you have superpowers and you come from Earth 2, you're a bad guy. That seems like we haven't met any in that show yet. We haven't met any Earth 2 people with superpowers that are good.
Now, you can't really count the Jay Garrick Flash, can you? At least not
right.
yet.
Not yet, and retroactively, no. So.
Yeah. And we happen to see Flash on this episode of Arrow this week as well.
We did, and we bring that up on our Flash podcast, Scarlet Velocity, because it was very interesting that Flash had his powers on Arrow this week, which may be a holdover from the fact that basically they wrote this whole sequence at the beginning of the season. So it doesn't really quite sync up if you are not up on your Flash show. He currently is sans power.
Yeah, at least in the real timeline, it doesn't sync up. In our timeline.
Right, which kind of makes me think that, you know, this episode would have served itself, you know, immediately following the last episode, because that would have been when Barry lost his powers. Arrow and Flash have been off a week now with their breaks. They're going to end... Arrow now will end a week later because of the way the breaks shifted and stuff like that. So I don't know. But I'm interested to see what Katie Cassidy is going to do in, you know, another Black Canary style character over there. And obviously Earth 2 characters, since they are doppelgangers, are very similar, yet give the actors huge freedom to do all sorts of other different things with the characters.
Yes.
So.
No word if she has the evil doppelganger goatee yet, is there?
Oh, God, I hope not.
Yeah, me too.
So, All right. Well, let's start off talking a little bit about legacy. You mentioned the legacy of the Black Canary in your little opening piece here. So to you, what is legacy? What does that mean?
That is the part of the Star Wars universe that apparently doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
But that's not,
I thought you were going to say it's everything below the hippocy. So that's good. You're actually,
oh, yours was better. Yours was better. I applaud you. Thank you.
So no, but like in terms of, you know, superheroes and stuff like that, you know, we often talk about the legacy of different characters and superheroes and stuff like that. What does legacy mean to you?
You know what? I think to me, it means that, the hero, let me back up a little bit. Okay. Comic book universes are very, very vast. And they're very diverse. They have literally hundreds of, characters and heroes and superpowered people populating their universe. It's very common to have powers in a comic book universe, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you you can also buy T-shirts with them on it at Target. But they aren't all... how do you say iconic, I guess, you know, like a Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman kind of thing, you know?
Right. They're the character that, you know, their heroes have been diluted because, you know, you can only have so many characters that are based on Superman.
Right. Right.
You know, they have those kind of powers.
And some of them have lasted a really long time, and some of them only last a few issues and get canceled because they're not real popular. Right.
Okay. Yep.
So to me, legacy, you know, within that universe is a hero that has really made a difference, that has really stood out to make a positive difference in that world. And they don't necessarily have to be around for a long time, but they have really done something to change the course of characters and events as they did progress through their lives within the story.
Mm-hmm. And maybe not even just in the comic book, but within our real world and in interpretations of the comics, you know, the fact that, for example, you mentioned Superman and Batman. Those are characters that we in the real world relate to. And, you know, because of their, longevity,
yes.
Is longevity tied into legacy, do you think?
I think it is. I think it can be. I don't think it has to be. You know, I mean, yeah. I think you could probably have characters that weren't around very long that have made a huge difference. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but ones that have been around for so long.
Deadpool, definitely. I mean,
oh, yeah, there you go.
He's someone that is iconic. I think there is a legacy there. You know, and he's really only been around, what, 25 years? Well, maybe 25 years or something like that. So
yeah, for the popularity of that character, that's not very long at all. So, I I think it can really make a difference for characters that have been around forever and consistently forever. You know, I mean, they'll pull from characters that were in old comics, but you have never heard of them, or you'll have to go back and find out who they really were. So I do believe that Black Canary would fit that mold of being somebody that, number one, has been around for a really long time and has made a huge difference in the comic books that she's been in, especially being married to Green Arrow and things that have happened to her in the past, especially in
Longbow Hunters?
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of, where some really, you know, tragic things that happened that changed the course of those characters' decisions, you know, especially Green Arrow. And it within the show, I think the actions that she has shown, I guess that was a poor choice of words, but you know, the things that she has done to save the city and to help the city have shown that she really put herself out there and ultimately sacrificed herself to help the people of the city and to help her friends. So on the side of justice and right. So that to me is what legacy would be.
Okay, right. And so she's a character that's been around since people in the comic book industry refer to as the Golden Age, basically the 40s and the 50s. And she was then reinvented in the Silver Age, the 50s/60s, where, you know, somewhere actually it was in the, it would have been in the 60s, I think, when she ended up getting reinvented, and has been around pretty much since then. In terms of the TV show, the character of Laurel and Black Canary, they presented a lot. They talked a lot about her legacy and how Evelyn, the girl that was masquerading as Black Canary in this particular episode, was really ruining Laurel's legacy. And I just wanted to clarify with you: does Laurel or the Black Canary really have a legacy in the show? This episode appeared to build some elements in the flashbacks and the backstory of the characters to maybe build up what could be a legacy. But if we ignore those flashbacks, did Laurel or the Black Canary have a legacy coming into this arc, basically?
I think she did, and I think it kind of began back at the season finale, I think it was last season, or at least close to the season finale. Do you remember when she was really getting in there in the streets, when there was a lot of chaotic things happening and she was jumping in
the middle of the streets? When Wildcat was training her and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, she was saving a lot of citizens of Star City and you know, really starting to become Black Canary. But people knew who she was, and they knew that she was saving them and working hard to save the city, and that she was a hero. You know, she was a vigilante who was somebody that was on the side of good. And so I do think she was.
She transcended that vigilante moniker that everybody was getting. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and we see that in the real world too. You know, I mean, when you hear about, a police officer who stopped a crime or saved a kidnapped child or something, or a firefighter that you know, got some people out of a burning building. So they'll do a news story about that one particular person, and they kind of become a city hero for a while. But this is an ongoing thing. She continues to save the city. So I absolutely think she's kind of achieved that status already, and people knew who she was. And I don't, you know, I know that Oliver didn't want that to be ruined by people giving her a bad name.
Right, right. No, I do agree with that. I think those are all good points. And as a character, I think Laurel had taken on a legacy. So in the first season, we knew there was this character, Dinah Laurel Lance. And, you know, you and I discussed on our podcast what this character was in the comic books. And that informed our desires as to what we'd like to see from this character in the show. But they were ignoring, I'm going to put in air quotes, ignoring her legacy from the comic books, because they wanted to build this character for this particular show. And I believe we had discussed, and I know I was unhappy with where they had started out with the character. She was a very uninteresting character, but then sometime around season two, they started basically deconstructing the character and taking her, you know, down to her base elements, running her into the ground through addiction, and then they worked her back up through rehab, and becoming a district attorney, and taking the fight to the city, and finally dressing up and taking on the legacy of her sister. And had gotten to a point here in season four where I was a huge champion of this character because of all the stuff that we had gone through. And I think the show had done a really good job of building a legacy for Laurel and the Black Canary in the Arrow universe. And I was really upset at their decision to, you know, kill off this character in the last episode. But I agree that it probably was the best decision for them to make. Any other decision that they had made, and we had discussed a number of possible outcomes for who was in the grave, mm-hmm, all season long, all of them were going to be cheap and just inconsequential, really, when it comes down to it. I mean, they would drive characters to do certain things, but I don't think that they would have had the same impact as this particular character. And obviously, I think that's what the producers were going for. And I think in the long term, for the rest of this season and into season five, and who knows beyond there, that I think that Laurel's death will really resonate more with all the characters that remain on the show than if John Diggle had died or if they had killed Felicity or, you know, any of the other secondary or tertiary characters that we discussed.
As it should be, I think. I think you're right. So it's one of those things that's hard to take, but as far as the story goes, it's probably the best, like you said. I mean,
yeah.
The other characters could have had long-lasting effects. I mean, and you're going to talk about this in a second, but even the death of Tommy really changed the direction of the show. And I would argue that he is a much more minor character on this series than here. Not just because he was in one season, but just because of the relationship between Laurel and Oliver, how powerful that was.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing Tommy up, because I did definitely wanted to talk about him, because they gave us a little fake out at the beginning of the episode, which I didn't mind. You think you're attending the funeral of Laurel, and it turns out we're in a flashback to May of 2013, I think they said it was, 2012, 2013, when they were burying Tommy. He died in the last episode of the first season, Sacrifice. And at the time, I remember when we were watching that and I was talking to you, and, you know, they had built up this really interesting character with Tommy, who was not really a comic-based character. He was the son of Malcolm Merlyn, who was the bad guy. And he had kind of gone back and forth to being an ally of Oliver, and maybe he's not. And, they fought, but then they were able to make up right there at the end, and then Tommy dies. And I remember being shocked by that, and it's like, wow, that really set the tone for what this show was. And for them to call back to that in this particular episode made me recall all of that stuff that had happened in season one, and, you know, the grieving that Oliver had to do and deal with in season two. So we're now talking about the legacy of Tommy. And, you know, they're kind of bringing up these feelings again, which I thought was for fans of the show that have been critical of the last season and a half, season to season and a half, I thought this was a really clever idea to put these seeds here, because it shows, you know, it's reminding you about some stuff from the show while paying tribute to it and, you know, again, extending the legacy of these characters into the reinvigorating the current season of the series.
I agree with all that. Yep. And that's after that, watching this episode, that's one of the reasons I felt better after watching it. So.
And you had mentioned how, did you say it was cathartic, or, it was the grieving process that you went through, you know, with this episode,
mm-hmm.
you know, just helped you out a little bit. I don't know that I necessarily felt that, but I felt that the episode was being very respectful to the characters, all the characters, not just the deceased ones. And I felt it was also being respectful to the fans, and just, it was getting back to some of the core values that I enjoy about Arrow.
Was there some particular aspect of it that you thought made it more respectful, or just out of curiosity? Because I think I have one, but...
So, Oliver was... He was brooding, as you mentioned in your opening, but none of the characters were really bemoaning their position. They were, everybody was grieving, and they went through the all the different emotional spectrums of you know, the whole process. But you know, I don't know. I guess it was that different characters were identifying with their flaws. They weren't just there crying about something because.
Yeah, I say that's kind of what I was thinking.
Solving their own problems, basically.
Yeah, and I thought everybody kind of acted within character, within their character this week, and I really appreciated the way Oliver acted. I think that's what did it for me. The way he behaved and helped people cope with this, especially Quentin, really struck a chord with me. That showed how much he has grown as a character and as a hero.
Yeah, yeah. That is true, because he was pointing out how, even though everyone is hurting, and his interactions with John too, because last week or the last episode, John was so critical of Oliver. I mean, to the point where it was farcical. I felt it was just, you know, he was screaming at Oliver that, you know, my brother can't possibly be bad, and it's like, you know, you're protesting so much that obviously that's what's going to happen. And Oliver, you know, definitely could have, you know, pointed out to John, like, I told you so. And there have been times here in the past season where, you know, they've done that. They've kind of just dug into each other, but Oliver was there for John, and it's, you know, and
yep. And Oliver
stuff
didn't,
like Felicity pointing out that, you know, John is just one illegitimate child from being Oliver Queen. I mean, it's interesting how the characters were kind of swapping palettes around, I guess, here.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yeah. And Oliver didn't run off, you know, and just retreat within himself. He didn't go off on a vengeance tangent, kind of like John did. He didn't lecture people. He was sad. Obviously, he was sad, but he knew the fight wasn't over. He knew there was more to do, and part of that was helping everybody get through this, and I think he did.
And he was supportive.
Very supportive, yes.
Right. The other thing that I think really helped me realize that this particular episode was doing something more is that the flashbacks served as a central pillar to the story. They were not some just tangential crap that was thrown in there to pay off later. It was a flashback to right after the end of season one. It actually fills in some interesting backstory for Laurel and Oliver that I think works well. I mean, we actually see one of the reasons why did Oliver decide to retreat at the end of season one back to Leanne Yu. You know, it kind of goes with like those people who get out of prison and, you know, they don't have any other experience in life, so they go and commit another crime so they can go back to prison. I mean, that's Oliver kind of retreated back to his own prison, his island. And, you know, not only was it building on the depth of and relating to the grief that the characters and the guilt and the blame and stuff that they were dealing with in the present day, it also, you know, built on the grief that they were going through at that time in the series. And that was just, it was effortless. I couldn't really, after it was over, I'm like, wait, we had a bunch of flashbacks here, because they just kind of flowed in and out of one another. And it wasn't this, okay, now we're going to a flashback, which doesn't really have anything to do with anything.
This all meant something. I thought they were fantastic this week. Interesting and refreshing that they didn't go back to the island at all this week. And good use of flashbacks for, you know, wherever this series ends up going, forever, however long it lasts, if it does last past the fifth season, you can see that you can still use the flashbacks without having to go back to those 5 years that Oliver was gone in an effective way.
Yeah.
Maybe a more effective way, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, having flashbacks into a storyline that the viewer has already lived through and has opinions about, and do it in such a way that it doesn't feel cheap, and it expands on the core of these characters. I thought it was well done, and I the fact that Wendy and Beth haven't worked on an episode for basically over a season here. I mean, they've individually worked on episodes and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily them, because the overall arcs are plotted out by the writers in, like, committee meetings, and the producers help with that. But these two are, you know, this in lesser writers' hands, this episode could have come off very cheesy. So I really appreciate that they brought their heavy hitters back for this. You mentioned John going kind of rogue. I thought it was also very interesting the comparison that the show made to the parallel that they made on John's actions against Ruve with Dark's actions against Laurel. I don't know if you picked up on this, but John's line to Ruve right before Oliver intervened was the same line that Dark used on Laurel last week. He says, "Maybe you can give your husband a message for me and substitute husband for father."
You know, I didn't notice that at the time, but that's important.
Because John was at a point in his grief where, and he kept saying the same thing, and I was like, it's a little annoying because he keeps talking about how Oliver told him this, and he keeps going over it in his head, and I'm like, he's like a stuck record. And he, you know, gets so frustrated, he's slamming his helmet on the back of the car, where he's so angry that he can't even, think straight, I guess.
And he says, "I don't even know who I am anymore."
Right. And, I mean, I've been in positions like that where, you know, you just get so frustrated with something, and you're not thinking about it. And, you know, I mean, and he was a... Granted, it appeared that the gun he had was a tranquilizer gun. That's what it looked like. There was a, when he shot the bodyguards in the front, there was a like a green feather.
Yeah, and I noticed that too.
I'm not sure how it pierced the glass of a front windshield. So that plot point aside, the dramatic elements of it, you know, kind of washed that away from me, because I was so interested in seeing what John was going to do with this, but. Obviously, he was descending down a dark path, and I think Oliver actually intervened, saved John from it. John would have probably beaten her to death at that point. I'm almost
positive. I think so. He didn't show any indication of stopping what he was doing, or, you know, yeah. I agree with you. I think he was going to take her out.
Yeah. We also had... we had really consistent thematic elements going on besides the kind of the core elements of legacy. Blame was a very heavy thematic element in this particular episode. John, as I said, you know, being blaming himself for not listening to Oliver when especially Oliver was just parroting John's advice back to him. That's got to be completely frustrating to realize that, you know, basically you weren't listening to yourself, and you know, how many times have we beat ourselves up for not doing something that we know we should do? And nobody else is telling you you've done anything wrong. It's all a kind of an internal monologue for that. Oliver blames himself about Tommy's death in the flashbacks. He's blaming himself for failing the people of Reddington, which is an interesting throwback to some stuff we got earlier in the season. Unfortunately, it's taken us so long to kind of deal with some of these issues. It seems like we're going to get a lot more about all the stuff with Dark here in the, you know, the, and his, what's his program called again?
Genesis.
Genesis. Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, we've been kind of just given so little clue about that. It seems like that's probably going to come more into play now. Felicity blames herself for not being there, and even for not stepping up to tell John that it wasn't his fault. I thought that was a really interesting take for her as well, because I didn't really pick up on the fact that she didn't say anything there, but she was, I guess, sensitive enough to John's feelings that the fact that she did not say, you know, it's okay, it's not your fault, you know, that is something that she was really sensitive to, which
surprised me. And I think you can even kind of see this as she's talking, but she was thinking it in herself, like, you know, this kind of is your fault, dude. Have you ever done that? Have you ever talked to somebody and said something to kind of make them feel better, but in your head you're saying just the opposite and you're really
upset all the time, Josh. Yeah,
that's every week, right about this time?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think Evie is, or Evelyn is, you know, blaming a lot of different people for her parents' deaths, and you know, who knows what else is going on. There's some other backstory there I feel like we might be getting some more of, kind of a interesting character that they've introduced and had run away real quick, but I'm actually interested to see a little bit more about her, whether or not she continues in the role that she was in. I don't know. You know, I was hoping that Oliver wasn't at the end going to say, "Will you come work with us?" I'm
yeah,
glad they resisted doing that, because that would not have felt right.
I was worried that she was going to come in and be a part of the team. I don't want that. I think she worked for what she was with the whole point of why they had her. Some people may disagree with that, because I have seen a lot of people think that was the weak part of the episode. I think she was absolutely necessary.
Did you think there was a weak part to the episode?
Oh, man.
While you're thinking about it, I'll tell you what I thought. I enjoyed all of the episode. I tweeted right before it started. I said, "Okay, Arrow, time to surprise me." And I think they did. And actually, a couple of people tweeted back to me that said, "Wow, actually, that was surprising." I'm not sure exactly which part they were referring to, depending on the time that they were watching. But the weakest part for me, unfortunately, was Paul Blackthorne's performance, especially considering how well I thought he did on last week's episode. Yeah, I felt he was written this way. He was manic, and he was totally insane. And I felt like he could have just dialed it back just a teeny bit. I felt he was a little too over the top as Quentin. And I totally understood the grief that the character was going through, and I could totally understand Quentin. You know, it's like, there's got to be a way to bring her back. Everyone thought Oliver was dead. Everyone thought Sarah was dead. You know, everybody has been dead, and we can bring her back. But I think he went just a little too far for me, and it was just too much.
I am on the other side of the fence. I actually really thought he did a great job, and I thought he, it was, again, very much in character with Quentin, you know, and if you think about what this guy has had to go through. I mean, he has basically lived through three deaths of his two daughters. I mean, who has to do that?
That totally sucks.
I mean, three times he's had to live through his daughter's deaths. And
the fact that the most current death is, as he said, you know, was the death of basically his rock. I mean, she was the one that stood up to him and helped him out. Even when she was having trouble, she still was his rock.
Yes. And which made it the toughest of all. Not, you know, not that losing Sarah wasn't hard, of course, but I thought he did a really good job. And I just thinking as a father, I guess, maybe I looked at it as this, but I can really see him feeling like that. And then, of course, because of all the stuff he's gone through in the last few years and all the weird stuff he's seen, thinking, yeah, maybe it could be possible to bring her back. And I tell you what, if I ever had to deal with that, my first call probably would have also been to my my daughter's former lesbian lover who lives in a League of Assassins with a, you know, a pit of water that can bring people back from the dead. That would be my first call, or at least a text.
In the top three, at least, right?
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I believe the written on the page, I can believe that. I just feel that Paul just needed to dial it down to like an 8.5, maybe. So, but again, I mean, that's really there might have been a couple of scenes with John where I felt that he was a little over the top as well. But you know, again, everybody's grieving this episode, but the majority of this episode, I bought right into. I was ready for this, and they delivered. I think it really addressed a number of concerns that fans were going to have, and they did it in a way that didn't feel too staged, I guess.
Yeah.
I really appreciated the scene at the beginning with the doctor, because I can't remember if we discussed this on air or off air last week, but and maybe it was just me talking with my family, but I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, they bring Laurel in, they cut her out of her costume, so they know it's the Black Canary, but then Oliver's there and it's like, everybody's going to know. And I'm still a little concerned that everybody's going to know that Oliver's the Green Arrow now, though at the end of the episode, he did say, before she died, Laurel told me that she was the Black Canary. But all the important people know that he's also the Green Arrow, you know, Ruve and Damian and Andy and everything like that. But as far as the public goes, they only know that she's the Black Canary.
Yeah.
We finally got to, you know, address the biggest elephant in the room, which was the scene, the graveside scene, which had obviously a few extra moments in it.
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting scene. The way that Oliver and Felicity interacted with each other didn't quite fit for me. I mean, it was all good. It didn't bother me.
The tone was different. For me, it was Oliver's tone with Barry, because he had gone from reading his eulogy to Laurel, and he was soft and strong. He was sad, but he wasn't angry. And then, you know, because they had already shot these scenes, and I could not tell if they had reshot these scenes for this particular episode or if this is the same footage we saw, you know, back in the beginning of the season.
It felt the same to me.
It did feel the same, and you know, often they can still reshoot it to look the same, but whatever. I feel that it probably is the same footage, because I don't know that Stephen Amell would have known how to play the scene without having all this other stuff, and you know, having to do it at the beginning of the season. It's very hard for an actor to make those choices about how to play the scene, because they haven't done everything that leads up to this.
Yeah.
But yeah, the tone was a little off in that.
That's what I was thinking too, especially with Oliver and Felicity, because they hadn't been so cold to each other for a few episodes. So
right,
it was
right.
A little surprising to me.
Right. I did have a few questions that arose during the episode. The main one was, they kept talking about how the Canary Cry, the sonic device, was created by Sisko only to work with Laurel's vocal cords, yet Evelyn was able to make it work. So how was it modified? Is she like that good with the utility, or did Sisko just not do it right, which I find hard to believe? Or
I don't know. It was kind of odd, but and I guess I wouldn't have even thought of it as being odd if they hadn't mentioned it. But they did mention that it was only supposed to work with Laurel, so how she did it.
A couple of times, too. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, just because Sisko did it, that doesn't mean somebody else couldn't be smart enough to do it as well. She was a straight-A student, they said. She was very smart, so somehow she modified it and made it much louder, which I think was part of the reason that it was so effective on Oliver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you think she was a weaker link in the episode because of any of this?
No, I said, I saw people talking about that, and I disagree. She wasn't I don't know. I was going to say maybe that her acting skills, but even that I thought kind of fit pretty well. I think it worked really well. I thought it was an effective little thing that they had to deal with. I mean, they dealt with it pretty quickly. It's not like she was impossible to catch. He missed her once because he wasn't expecting the ability that she had. But once they did, they were able to stop her, and it worked in that she was he could use that to reveal the Black Canary identity, and I don't want to say make it better, but it was a nice little part of the story that I thought worked well with him revealing who Laurel was.
And then the other part, she mentions when she attacks Alex that he works for them. And, you know, I've always felt a little weird about Alex this season. It's just I can't really ever put my finger on it. It just there's something strange about the character and the way that they have him acting in certain scenes. And
yeah, very interesting.
So, you know, they kind of answered this in the episode because, you know, did she mean Hive or Dark or just Ruve? Because we know she works with Ruve, and if Evelyn was in Reddington, she would have seen Dark and probably would have seen Ruve and can put one and one together and, you know, figure out what's going on. So it could be she's just meaning that, or it means that she's seen Alex working at Reddington with Hive behind the scenes. And of course we don't know any of that yet. So, I feel like like I said, they did answer it in the show because Oliver and, Thea kind of like dissected what she said there, and it was like, do you mean Hive? It's like, no, Ruve. So I think,
still felt weird though. I'm telling you, it still felt weird. Like something else is going on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, like you said at the beginning of the episode, we got some feedback here, and since we've been off for 2 weeks, we got this great piece of feedback, from Monica, an email that she sent in just after our last episode. And I wanted to spend some time because it's a little long, but I did want to read a good portion of this because I think she encapsulates a number of things that I've been feeling, and I'm sure that other fans out there are feeling, and some probably things that you guys listening are feeling. I know I've heard from several of our listeners, and there are some common elements here. So she says, hi, Jay and Josh. I've been an avid listener of your pod since season 3 of Arrow. I found you while searching for a good Flash podcast and realized you also did an Arrow one and excitedly went back and listened from the first episode. I look forward to your thoughts and insight on every episode. One thing I enjoy most is that a lot of times you both have differing opinions on what happened and you talk it out and show a view I may not have thought of, and sometimes it helps my feelings on the things that I am not happy with. Kind of like we were just discussing with Lance, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. That being said, I've been on the fence with the show since about the time I started listening to you guys. And sometimes I think that you are the reason I've continued on this long.
Aww.
I really do think, I love that. That's great. Thank you. I really do think the melodramatic relationship stuff has killed off what was once a very compelling drama. I do enjoy the characters of Felicity and Oliver, but I wish they had never put them together romantically. That part I could live though, as long as I had other aspects of the show to focus on. Being a female myself, I've been drawn to the kick-ass female characters that the show had in spades until recently. Josh, this is also something that I hear from a lot of fans online. I don't know too many ladies in person that watch the show other than my wife, but with the lack of female representation in action movies for the most part up until recently, and TV shows and superhero films and stuff like this, I know a lot of people have been interested in this, and I think your girls really respond to that as well, right?
Yeah, they do. They don't watch Arrow so much, but they do respond to that kind of thing in superhero
shows.
Like
a Supergirl. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
She goes on to say, this was one show where I could never pick a favorite character, although it was Laurel, truthfully, because there were so many amazing characters to choose from Oliver and Dig and Tommy to Laurel and Thea and Felicity. There was Nyssa and Sarah and Malcolm and Roy and Quentin and even Ray. And I was just giddy every Wednesday, also waiting impatiently for the next episode. Now I have nothing. They have taken everything and spun it on its head and killed off slash gotten rid of most of the almost all the amazing female characters that I was excited to have my teen girls watch weekly. We are very upset. It was bad enough that Thea and Laurel and Dig seemed to be pushed to the back in favor of Alicity storylines, but now they may have pushed it even further away. The thing that upsets me most about last week's episode, the death of Laurel Lance, and not just the death of Laurel Lance, but it was the way that it was portrayed. Laurel was not killed because she was a badass female superhero. Laurel was not killed because she was an amazing lawyer who fought for justice unwaveringly. Laurel Lance was not killed on her own character or merit. She was killed to send a message to Quentin Lance. Not only that, her last words to Oliver were about their relationship and were used to push Alicity back together. She was a pawn. Her death wasn't about her. Everything about it was to move other storylines. She doesn't even get a hero's death, and I'm pissed. She wasn't even killed by Dirk directly. She only survived the stabbing long enough to play Cupid of sorts for Oliver and Felicity. How cheap is that? So she says, I really want to come back next season. I really do. I just need them to give me a reason to do so. Right now, I don't feel like they can possibly fix it to a point where I would care, which is always, you know, a shame. You know, she finishes up by saying, Arrow was my first love of these DC shows, and I'm sad. You know, here's the rest of the season, seeing if they can fix this problematic show.
yes.
Change a word there.
Yeah, you know what? When I read this, man, I tell you what, it really made an impact on me. I mean, this email. It was a lot of really great thoughts that I was having as well. Some of them I think I have been relieved now, but others are still a big concern.
I would really be interested to find out from Monica what she thought about Canary Cry, because while I don't want to take away from any of the points that she made in this email, because there is an amazing amount of truth in all of this, but the writing, as we've just discussed in Canary Cry, I think they did a number of things to help preserve what was great about the Laurel character and the Black Canary character.
Yeah.
And I mean, you and I as two white dudes really can't have, you know, the female perspective on this. So I'd be interested to see what
I also something
Monica
else
or any other ladies have to say about this. So
something else she kind of addressed in this, which I think may be possible to help and even help her, Monica, get, you know, back into this, because I am kind of with her as far as the getting Oliver and Felicity back together. I don't think they're going to do that. I don't actually think they are going to get back together. And I
hope they do not do that.
I do too, but I do like Felicity as a character. I liked her as a character before they had the relationship. And I think it suffered from that curse that a lot of shows have had. Once two characters get together, it kind of goes downhill. It's that tension between characters before they get together that makes it interesting and fun to watch. I liked Felicity as a character because I thought she was fun and quirky and funny. Once they got together, she lost a lot of that. I like it when she was with Ray, but not so much Oliver.
So also, they found a character that they could really, that would really resonate with fans.
Yeah.
And they overused her to such an extent that, you know, basically it burned everybody out on it. For the people that liked her, I think it burned them out. For the people that hated her, it just pushed them away and annoyed them even more so.
Yeah, and it also turned her into a character that she didn't start off to be, you know, more of this love interest relationship, but rather than the quirky, not sidekick, but comic relief, right? But now that this has happened, I don't think they'll get back together, but Felicity was feeling some guilt for not being there for the team when this all went down. And so I'm thinking that they can get her back as a member of the team, but not as the romantic interest. And, I could be wrong about this, and I'm not disagreeing, with Monica one bit, but I don't think Laurel's last words were about the relationship, but we don't know what they were because they didn't show us.
Oh, right. The last words that we heard, I think, right? Because she asked Oliver to do something else.
Yeah. So I agree with
Maybe
you there.
Maybe she
that
asked
is
Oliver
sad.
To give Evelyn the sonic device. Maybe that's what it was. I didn't even think
I don't think
that.
So, but yeah.
No? Okay. Wow.
So, man.
Did you know? I'm sorry, just to, since I brought up Evelyn again, did you notice she walked by the hospital room right at the beginning of the episode, right when Lance was coming in?
I didn't notice that. I should go back and check that out.
Now that you know, now that you recognize her,
is she the frequent flyer that Dr. Schwartz was talking about?
Don't know.
Because if she wasn't, which didn't seem like she was, who is? Why'd they bring that up?
I'm sorry, I can't tell you.
Yeah.
Confidentiality and stuff. So, we also got an email from Jeremy, who had a number of similar issues and things that we've been discussing. He says, "I know that shows need to evolve from season to season, and characters have to change and have different plot lines. But I can't believe you guys are pumped that the show has evolved into this. I'm glad Oliver isn't killing people on his father's list. I'm glad Slade Wilson ended with season two. I'm also glad they're telling different stories, but his problem is with execution. The show was completely and solely about Oliver Queen. It was his path and his journey. And sure, the supporting characters helped him and helped move the story along, but they never took over the story. Never in a way that they are, especially this season." And he says, like you guys, I'm hoping that the death of Laura will drive Oliver to work alone again, kind of like Batman after the death of the second Robin. I'm holding out hope for the show, but I'm definitely losing my religion. So,
you know, I can understand that, what he was saying. I don't know that you and I are pumped about this. I think I'm
right. I don't
pumped.
Think we've ever said that, but I think he's saying it in more of a rhetorical way, you know, like that, he doesn't think we're pumped about it. Which,
no, but
right,
I mean, like, I think I said a couple weeks ago or maybe last time, I'm excited to see what they do next season because it does have to change. I haven't been pumped up so much about where they went this season, but I am very interested to see what's coming up. And I really do still like these characters, and I like the story and the universe that they've created on this show. So I do have faith that they can turn something around again. The storyline this season didn't do it for a lot of people. Certain parts of it didn't do it for me, but I'm interested to see what they have next week. I have not given up yet. I think they can do more.
And then final piece of email we got basically immediately after this show aired this week was from Tyler, who tells us that he usually doesn't like emailing as soon as an episode ends. I find it more useful to convey thoughts after I let them simmer. However, I can't help but to get this in. He says, "What an episode, a great score, full of heart, where you saw a wide array of emotions from everyone involved, an episode dedicated to the legacy of both Laurel as a person and the Black Canary as a hero, and it also sets the tone for the home stretch of the season. I'm sure you'll bring this point up, but, you know, Barry has his speed," which, yep, that we've discussed that on several shows here. So he just wanted to say, "Also, nothing of value for me this week. Just feels important to speak up when content is good, not just when it's lackluster."
I agree with that, and thank you. I agree with everything you said there.
Yeah. So, and there was one part I did skip over in Jeremy's email. He pointed out how the ends, like basically the last five episodes of each of the first two seasons were, you know, more cinematic, where, you know, it doesn't seem like we're getting that here. True. We don't know what the last, well, I think what we got another four episodes left here. So, you know, this episode seems to, you know, have closed off one chapter, and I'm assuming that the last four episodes are going to kind of work together, you know, as a larger story, kind of the way that the end of the other seasons have, but we'll have to see. But, I am a little more optimistic, given what they did, here this week, but, you know, time will tell, and we'll see what happens as they try to wrap up the Damian Dark storyline here.
I'm interested. I really am.
Couple references I wanted to get in here. Evelyn Crawford Sharp is based on a character called Evelyn Crawford, who is a superhero named Starling from the New 52 Birds of Prey comic. So she is actually based on a comic book character, which you know, that's what they do when they bring characters onto the show. They seem to.
I didn't know that one. That.
Yeah, I was not familiar with that character either. Does not dress like Black Canary, but could have been a protege, I think. And then Dr. Schwartz in this episode appears to be named after the writer Beth Schwartz, which I was like, I don't know if I'm sold on having a writer name themselves. But then technically she was in the previous episode, so if they could have named her for that episode.
Yeah, just possibly. Missed it, so. I'm interested to see where that character goes. I think they might bring her back in some way. I actually thought she might be the canary at first, or the imitation canary.
You know who I thought it was because I was – and this is completely ridiculous. I saw people tweeting that they thought it was Felicity's mom or something like that. But I was actually going to say it was going to be Dinah Lance, Laurel's mom. Because if it was keyed to Laurel's vocal patterns, well, wouldn't her mom have, you know, like a similar DNA structure or whatever, you know, so we could explain it some way like that. But yeah, that
lasted. Would have been interesting too.
You know, and the fact that it's River Song, I thought that would be kind of cool because she is kind of a kick-ass character, but not in this show. The mom is definitely a weeper.
Yes, she is.
So, all right. Well, Josh, thanks for hanging out with me and talking about Canary Cry. I had a good time discussing that with you on this week's episode of Green Justice.
Oh, I did too. And now I'm more pumped up than I was last time you and I talked to see what happens next. So,
well, good. I'm glad we can just sit down and talk for the next 4 weeks about this, and then we can be done with season four. And
all
we
right.
can decide what – did it work or did it not work?
Yeah, I'm still interested to see how our Springsteen speculation goes too. So that's coming up.
Right. We did not get the actual title. It's called Down in the Flood is the actual name of the penultimate episode. That we did not guess that, but doesn't mean any of our plot elements aren't – in
right.
there in some fashion.
Right. We could have something correct still. I'm holding out hope that I might have been right.
Yeah, three more weeks.
All right. Well, if you guys all enjoyed listening to us talk about this episode, you know, make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. I would love to have you just go over there just right now, just if you have time. If you're not driving in the car, get on iTunes and give us a quick review with lots of stars and maybe a comment. I would love to hear what you say. Also, if you want to contact us, send us some emails. Tell us how you feel. Monica's email really, really struck a good nerve as I was reading that, and I felt better after I read it. So you can send that to us, greenjustice@randomchatter.com. You can also visit us on Twitter @greenjusticepod and our Facebook page, facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
Also, feel free to check out the other podcasts Josh and I host, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and the aforementioned Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. Also, or all of these can be found at randomchatter.com, with all shows available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. Let them know that we're a little beacon of hope here in their post-apocalyptic world without Laurel Lance. So remember, if you guys don't keep listening, you have failed the city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.